Little Red Riding Hood, The Big Bad Wolf, and The Three Little Pigs? It's a mixed-up fairy tale world in Uh-Oh, a musical written and composed by Diana Woolley, CEO of Lamb Arts Regional Theater. She joined me to talk about her latest production set to take stage next weekend. She also reminisced about taking charge of entertainment activities as a child, the early years of Lamb, and empathy's connection to the arts. Stay tuned. Like all good stories these days, this one isn't complete without a couple Russians. Once again, Lamb Arts Regional Theater is part of the Betty Ling Sang Fine Arts Series at Morningside College. Tell me about Uh-Oh.
I think this is our third or fourth summer of doing original musicals there. And Uh-Oh is a story about Little Red Riding Hood, who meets the wolf, of course, on her way to Granny, so people know that story, but she also runs into the three little pigs. And the three little pigs turn out to be very mean pigs. They're mean girls. And hilarity ensues.
Okay. I always imagined the three little pigs as boys for some reason.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, no, these are cute little girls. They're just adorable.
Last year, the play was Oops.
Oops, yeah. We're trying to think of all possible, like, I don't know what we could go with next time. Oh, no!
Yeah, we have Uh-Oh. I think Oh, No.
It comes right after.
Yes. But Oops, you know, that was based on the Emperor's New Clothes.
Uh-huh.
And you've also produced Hansel and Gretel and The Long Way, Way Home.
That's right.
And Snow White and the Missing Dwarfs.
That was the first one, yeah. I think we ended up doing 50-some performances of that one because that one toured with the Lamb Caravan.
Okay.
And then plus it went into different schools. So that one really had a long life.
So is Uh-Oh part of the Lamb Caravan?
It is. And we are doing some traveling. We're going to perform for the Siouxland Y camp. And also for Camp Imagination,
Okay. Before
we do the Betty Ling Sang. Same week, so we have five performances.
And who do you have as the actors in Uh-Oh?
They're students from the Lamb School. One of them is a graduate. She's at Northwestern University and one of our former students. And she came back as one of our teachers this summer. And she also consented to be in the show. So now the kids range in age from fifth grade all the way through a sophomore in college.
Well, what is it about these fairy tales that made you want to do more shows like it? You know, you started with Snow White and the Missing Dwarves, and that was the first show that you created for the caravan, and you know, now you've done three more shows like that since then. So what is it about this storyline or type
of
story?
Well, you know, I think kids are always interested in stories and in fairy tales, and they know the original stories fairly well. And so they enjoy seeing the twists and turns. And I write a lot of adult humor into the shows, too. Not tons of it, but enough that I love it when somebody giggles because I use a word or two that they go, oh, my gosh, it sounds funny coming out of a little kid. But it makes sense.
Like Disney.
It's like Disney, yeah.
Well, what was the first musical you've ever written?
Now, are you saying that because you know what it is?
I do know what it is because we've talked before.
Yes. Well, I did The Land Where Everything's Upside Down and The Little Princess Who Couldn't Smile. Those were when I was just out of, those the two that I wrote, told you about?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's funny. Yeah, those were when I was just out of high school. And I played all the music live and we were at Grace Methodist Church and I had Diana's School of Music and Theater. I don't know what the world I was thinking, but I had 100 kids, two different summers, and it was just me. And 100 kids, and we had classes, and we did shows, and it was fun.
See, now you've never told me that piece. So
that's something new, huh?
Of the story, yeah.
I know. Did I ever tell you when I was little, I have two sisters that are 2 years apart. So, I mean, I'm the oldest, and then they're two. We all played string instruments. So I played the viola, and my younger sister played cello, and my baby sister was not yet old enough to play the violin. My sister that played the cello and I got out of the parking on South Martha Street, and we played the only patriotic song we knew for 2 hours, My Country 'Tis of Thee, on the 4th of July, and my little sister was dressed up as the Statue of Liberty, just dripping wet. We grew up doing little shows, and the neighborhood was always full of carnivals and circuses and track meets and silly things. So creating a musical for kids just kind of came naturally.
That's interesting to kind of see that progression. You know, you're still doing that all these years later.
Yeah, only years later. So I never grew up.
And I like how, you know, you're the oldest, and it sounds like you're always kind of...
Bossy?
I wasn't going to say that word.
Okay,
that
I think maybe my sisters were.
I was going to say you were showing executive leadership.
Oh, I like that better. I like that. Okay, I'll go with that.
In the words of Sheryl Sandberg, that you were showing executive leadership skills early age.
Uh-huh.
And now, I mean, you are the CEO.
I can't imagine a life without the arts. I just cannot imagine it. And I can't imagine a life without teaching. It just was a natural progression. Even though some people have said, why aren't you going to slow down a little bit? And there's just not enough time, not enough hours in the day, not enough days in the week or months in the year.
Why are they saying, are you going to slow down?
I don't know. Maybe because they want to slow down. I'm not slowing down. Yeah. I mean, I love writing children's plays. I did write the music for that when we did Death of a Salesman. Really enjoyed that. And so I'm working on the music for Crucible. And that's totally not children's theater. I think my biggest wish is I could hear it with live instruments. That would be a dream come true to hear something that I wrote with live instruments, because I'm just sitting with my computer making music. Isn't that sad?
How do you do that?
Well, there's programs. There's a program. It took me a long time to figure it out because I'm not very technical. But I hear an instrument in my head and I can hear what I want it to sound like. And then I just have to lay down a track, and I'm hearing the other instruments that I want, and I stick them in on top of each other. It's so fulfilling. I get to the point where I could just sit in a corner and just do that forever. And I had fun when we did Jungle Book. I studied Indian music, East Indian music, trying to figure out, okay, how can I give it that right kind of flavor? So I had a ball doing that. And I've learned more about music theory and more about the history of music by doing all this stuff. It almost feels like I could kind of reverse my brain a little bit and think younger. I wish I would have started this years and years ago.
So you didn't really have much history in composing?
Well, I did, but I didn't pay any attention. I was so busy. I was taking like 22 and 23 hours of college credits at a time, thinking, oh, isn't that cool? I can do that. Well, I was getting through everything, but I was, and I always was thinking, well, I'll take this class again, or I'll spend more time on that particular subject and I'll really learn it later. I just want to keep moving. And that was a mistake. But now, and I think maybe it would have been a lot easier what I'm doing. I'm learning a lot about theory though. And it's fun because now I have a reason to try to figure it out. Or before it was for a grade.
And you have that freedom, that creative freedom. And
and the creative frustration. I love that part, don't you? When you get frustrated about something, but you know that if you keep working on it, that something will all of a sudden click and you kind of go, man, that was cool. That is a feeling of accomplishment. If it came easy, if I understood theory totally and knew exactly what I was doing, I don't think I would feel as fulfilled.
I've never heard somebody say that. We always talk about creative freedom, and isn't that great? But the creative frustration goes along with it. We don't talk about that as much.
Yeah. I mean, I hate it when I'm going through it, but I love the end of it. Because, you know, if you're a fighter, you just keep fighting your way through it. And all of a sudden, you're at the other end, and you go, I did it. I made this work.
And you and, you know, your husband, Russ, have definitely shown that you are fighters.
Together. We don't fight against each other.
But starting Lamb and entering your 38th season
that's
fall.
That's something. And I'm only 29, which is amazing.
Right? Well, I was going to ask if you have reached a certain age, and that is why people are asking you.
Well, I've got a lot of friends that are my age that, you know, have decided to retire. And I'm finding myself just revving myself up, probably more than I was in my 40s. I want to write another main stage musical. And I want to write a play, a drama. I really want to do that. I don't know when I'll have time, but I'll figure it out.
Because you've mostly done children's musicals. As far as writing and composing, but you did do
They call her beautiful.
Yes.
And I do have an idea of redoing that one, but making it more of an opera than what it was.
You're writing the music, you're writing the storyline. What's it like to see all of those pieces come together on stage and actually see actors perform what you've created?
Yeah. It's always been exciting with the children's stuff. When I saw Michael Rollina create a set for They Called Her Beautiful, and such gorgeous lighting, and then Karen Sawinski's costumes and all that. I mean, that was just exciting. And then Donnie Short coming up with his choreography that had never been done before because the music had never been written before. I mean, there were several times when I just sobbed and thought, I cannot believe all these people are so invested. How blessed am I to be able to write something and then actually see it? How many people don't get that opportunity?
In the lineup for season 38, you have a youth theater production called What If, based on the folktale Stone Soup.
Yes, and over vacation time this summer, I'm going to decide what country we're going to place that in and what musical style we're going to be doing it in. I know kind of the direction I want to go, but I want to explore a different musical style, I think. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also going to be doing the music for Crucible.
Okay.
So, and directing.
So you have that in the lineup, but it's not actually finished yet.
Oh, I have a habit of doing this. When we were doing the caravan shows, which were advertised all over, it was 7 different states. I mean, I don't know if I should even say this. I would have a title. I'd have a wonderful description, but I hadn't written one word. I hadn't written one note, and then I just kind of followed along that way. And it all worked out. So.
Well, you're teaching all of these students. And you have been for many, many years.
Many years. Oh, 40-some.
What do students gain from being involved in theater? You know, if they have no intention of pursuing an acting career, what would you say?
Well, just yesterday, we had Girls Inc. coming over. We had a workshop with the fourth graders. And I always get emotional when I watch kids on stage. But to see how they were acting out, it was a movement piece that they were doing about the beginning of their day. And there, here we have 30-some kids on the stage, and their eyes are all lit up. The confidence that I see, and they're sharing their thoughts and their ideas and their movement, the confidence is incredible. And to get in touch with who we are as human beings, and to know that other human beings have the same feelings, that we're not just an isolated little thing, that we're all, everything's connected. That's really exciting, and that you really get that with the arts.
And you've told me in the past that you've had students who do enter acting, but you've also had teachers, lawyers.
Doctors. We're getting a lot of people in the medical field right now.
Really?
Yes. And they're getting praised because they have such empathy for their patients, and when they do those little kind of practicum things where a student has to act like a patient, that they're able to do those things or they're able to relate to their patients. It's hard to say, I'm going to teach you empathy, but if you're doing creative theater and creative dramatics and that sort of thing, you're teaching empathy.
And then looking back all those years when you first started LAM, was it even called LAM?
It was
always called LAM.
Yeah,
okay.
I remember sitting with my husband in a restaurant trying to come up with a name, and we thought of Bear Productions, thought, no.
Just why Bear?
Well, Woolly Bear.
Oh.
Woolly Lamb. It just, I remember doing that. But I also remember our kids were babies. We would do a show and I'd have the bills laid out all over the living room floor. They were in bed because otherwise I'd have a mess. The receipts from the shows would be laid on top to figure out, okay, this bill is paid by this and that's going to be paid by that. And then, I guess we got to use a credit card for the rest. I remember those days very clearly. So glad those days are over. But we were determined that we wanted to offer something that we didn't see happening here. We've stayed really clear and very direct in that approach.
What did you think LAM would be, and then what did it actually become?
That's a good question. We always wanted it to be a place where there would be growth, not only for the audience to see production values increasing, but also a place where actors would feel safe enough to grow themselves so that we could prove to ourselves that we weren't making a mistake staying here, that we would be able to create a community of actors and technicians that would have the same high standards and keep growing together, and they have create this wonderful community family, whatever you'd want to call it, and be able to do things that we knew we could do somewhere else, but we wanted to know that we could do it here.
Why was it so important to know that you could do it here?
It's one of those things where my grandmother always said, bloom where you're planted. And I remember going, but I don't want to be. Why do I want to stay? Just because I was planted here, why can't I be transplanted? But I did take that to heart, and I thought I would try it for a while and just see where it would go. And then it got to the point where I thought, you know, we're on the right path. If we weren't on the right path, we would have been gone long ago.
You could have transplanted yourself into a bigger market, into...
Could have.
We'll stick with this metaphor.
You'll stick with it, yes, into a bigger garden.
Into a bigger pot, yes, a bigger garden.
Uh-huh.
You know, where in the plant world you would grow.
That's true. You kind of give yourself a time, and you kind of see what you've accomplished within that time limit, and kind of go, okay, this is what we were able to do up to this point. Now, can we move it any further? Can we move that bar any higher, or are we stuck? There were two definite times when we felt stuck. But it's just one of those things where it's somebody says something, somebody does something, and it's unstuck. It became unstuck. So we didn't have to leave.
Well, what's one of the most exciting things that you've done in all the years of Lamb? One might be hard to pick out. But...
Yeah, one is hard.
or a couple things.
One time when we were doing Evita, this is kind of exciting. I don't know why these Russian guys were in the audience. They were like, I don't know, like important people from Russia. Why they were in our audience, I have no idea. Two guys. They waited after the show for me to come down the steps and they kissed my hand. I thought I was going to die. I thought I was like really something. And then I blushed terribly and don't know a lick of Russian. So that was the end of the story. That's it. In Evita, I remember clearly, this is not very good of, I mean, it doesn't reflect very well on me. We had this balcony, and I was singing Don't Cry For Me, Argentina. Everybody knows that. That's the only song people really, really know in that show. And I forgot the words. Now, the whole chorus is facing me. Somebody could have fed me the words, but no. They are bursting out laughing, trying to hide the fact that they're laughing, watching me make up Spanish-sounding nonsense syllables. Yeah. I don't think that was a production that the Russians came to.
That wasn't that. Who knows? Maybe you were speaking Russian.
I could have been.
I've been talking to Diana Woolley, CEO of Lamb Arts Regional Theater and Siouxland Public Media's Artist of the Month. She is the writer, composer, and director of Uh-Oh, a children's musical that explores what happens when Little Red Riding Hood wanders far off the beaten path. The Lamb Caravan production is part of the Betty Ling Tsang Fine Arts Series at Morningside College. Showtimes are 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. Friday, July 14, and 10 a.m. Saturday, July 15. For more information, visit lambtheater.com. For Siouxland Public Media, I'm Allie Carson.